Welcome to Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Odyssey Podcast Network. I'm Kyle Madsen. I write about the 49ers over at NinersWire.com, part of the USA Today's sports media group. That's Chris Biederman, who covers the 49ers, among other things, for a paper of record on the West Coast of the United States, the 48 contiguous United States of America. We've got to dive into some training camp, not takeaways, just observations from day one of training camp. Chris is out, boots on the ground down in Santa Clara, braving the electrical substation to be out there and bringing you all the latest from day one of 49ers training camp. But before we do that, a big shout out to our friends at Lamb Chops. They're the official clothing brand of this podcast. SGLambChops.com is the website. New summer line out now. Check it out. And when you check out, use promo code Candlestick20 to receive 20% off your order today. Lamb Chops, join the herd. All right, 49ers training camp, day one. Here we go.
Hey, this is George Kittle, and you're listening to Candlestick Chronicles.
Chris, boots on the ground in Santa Clara. You made the trek down to the South Bay. You're now back up in Sacramento. About time someone did some reporting on the 49ers. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, it's Kyle Shanahan getting into a serious car accident that left him with broken ribs and a broken hand. And a concussion and needing 40 stitches in his face is not a laughing matter. But yeah, we were at training camp and Kyle Shanahan made an appearance and he came out onto the practice field and stood next to John Lynch as the two watch practice. John Lynch typically watches team drills probably about 30, 40 yards downfield from, you know, like where deep safety might be.
Classic John Lynch.
That's where Shanahan watched. I don't know if there are going to be any photos of Shanahan because I think he pretty deliberately came out after the portion of practice where you can take photos and videos and social media posts and all that. For team drills, you're not allowed to take video or photography. But he was out there. He was wearing sunglasses, which is notable. Kyle Shanahan, I've never seen him wear sunglasses on a practice field, even in training camp when it's always, you know, bright and sunny in Santa Clara. He was wearing a cast on his left hand, and he's sporting a mustache. And Fred Warner made the joke that it looked like Kyle Shanahan was kind of in disguise, which making light of the situation. But like, you know, we haven't talked since the news broke on Saturday morning about the accident. Obviously, a serious accident in terms of Shanahan's injuries, but not serious enough to, you know, keep him away from the start of training camp. And there was a lot of discussion about the journalism and sort of the lack of reporting initially on the accident itself. And I have a lot of thoughts on that, but I think, you know, first of all, before we get to that, just Chris Forster is a head coach. The 49ers aren't really having team meetings right now, which would typically be led by Shanahan. They're splitting up in offense and defense. Clay Kubiak, the offensive coordinator, is talking with the offense, coaching up the offense. Raheem Morris, the new defensive coordinator, former Atlanta Falcons head coach, coaching up the defense and, you know, talking to Trent Williams and Fred Warner today, just at the podium. It doesn't sound like this is like completely upending the operation. Like, it's obviously a pretty significant wrinkle and a weird thing that's happening, but it doesn't sound like it completely changes the way the 49ers go about their business to start training camp. So I have no idea, honestly, how much this is impacting the team. Practice looked pretty normal, save for Kyle Shanahan being in a different spot, coming onto the field late, leaving the field early. He was out there for probably 20, 30 minutes. So it's hard to tell. If you didn't know like what the coaching situation was, it didn't look like a drastically different training camp practice from what I've seen before. So I have no idea how much is going to impact the football itself, but it's certainly a big story because, you know, it's Kyle Shanahan. It's one of the longest tenured coaches in the NFL, one of the better coaches in the NFL. And it's obviously a pretty substantial story, the fact that he got into an accident and is going to, you know, not be in full capacity as head coach for the foreseeable future, I guess.
A coach being in concussion protocol,
yeah,
is what would be a story regardless. I guess even if it's a player ran into coach on the sideline and coach fell and now he's going to have to be up in the booth for 2 weeks. Like that would be a story as well. So yeah, man, it's scary. You glad he's there. Glad he's okay. And it's glad he's not, you know, oh yeah, he's bedridden for the next 3 weeks and then we'll see how it goes. And John Lynch even saying that they're not anticipating he's going to miss week one in Australia is I think, you know, all signs point to this, you know, being, it's not good news, obviously, but it feels like it could have been really dramatically worse based on the injuries he suffered.
Yeah.
And so, just glad he's out there and glad he's healthy and safe. Yeah. And, John Lynch said this, and I had kind of, not to brag, but I'd kind of written the same thing before John Lynch said it. So credit to me for John Lynch stealing my thing. no, but the Niners are, if there's a team that's going to be without their head coach at a full capacity for the first couple weeks of training camp, it's a team with a bunch of returning veterans who have been through this before, a bunch of returning veteran coaches who have all been through this before. Somebody like Raheem Morris, who knows Kyle Shanahan and is friends with Kyle Shanahan, and isn't this like new guy who's new to the, like, he's new to the team and the players, but it's not like he has to get acclimated to working with Kyle Shanahan in some way. So I think if there was a team that was going to be able to withstand this without it dramatically impacting some area of their team, like, I think it's San Francisco. Like, they're in, again, not that it's like, oh yeah, it's fine that Kyle Shanahan's out. It's not like you'd rather the head coach be there, but if he's going to be out for X amount of weeks, there's worse coaching situations I think you can have behind him.
Yeah, and Chris Forster was given the title. It's either assistant or associate head coach. I forget which.
Assistant to the head coach.
Assistant. But he's been a coach in the NFL since 1992.
That's so, such a long time.
And he's an incredibly self-aware individual, I think. Like, he is great at the podium and very honest, and I think relatable, just like one of those human beings that is relatable in nature and self-effacing and just understands his role and who he is. And I think the players can respond to that in a positive way. You're not getting like a rah-rah guy coming in, gonna make speeches, gonna like say a bunch of stuff and sort of upset the apple cart with like a level of inauthenticity, right? I think Chris Forster knows that he's not the head coach, knows that these are weird circumstances, and I think all the players have an understanding of what's going on. And to your point, like the veteran leadership, the coaching staff, the fact that the 49ers have the program that's been in place for 10 years now, I think is a much better situation than if this were like a second or third year head coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this is a team that is established, the system's established, so they can, like, I don't know, this could have a massive impact on the season. We don't know yet, but I think you have to feel better about it from the standpoint of, okay, this is happening to a team that's been established, has a bunch of veterans, has a pretty high level coaching staff versus, mm-hmm, you know, like the Cleveland Browns in the first year of their new head coach, right? Like,
sure, right.
There's a very clear difference there, in my opinion.
Can we talk about the wild ass conversations that this created on the internet?
Yeah.
Just in case you're listening to this and you're not terminally online, buckle up.
Well, there's just been a lot of criticism of the Niners beat and journalists in general covering the team about how this crash was covered, and how it happened January, 14th or 12th?
July 14th.
Sorry, July 14th. Very different months, July and January.
Really different. Like, that's a massive, massive difference. they were playing in January.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of criticism, and Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk wrote about it. The thing, like, the reason why this didn't get reported immediately is because there's a very clear delineation between a crime and an accident. Like getting into a car accident is not a crime. So as far as we know, and what the officials from the Palo Alto Police Department have said, there's been no alcohol or drugs linked to this accident. So it's not a DUI situation. Mm-hmm. And because it's not a DUI situation, this falls into a different category of like personal injury. Mm-hmm. And when someone you cover is dealing with a personal injury and it's not going to cause, like, it's not ending Kyle Shanahan's career, the expectation is it's not going to cost him regular season games. So when things like this happen, there's a certain level of, there's just a certain protocol to where, particularly with head injuries, right? Like, it's not like Kyle Shanahan broke an arm, right? Like, a head injury is a very serious thing, potentially. And so when someone deals with a personal injury that's not a crime, it doesn't fall into the same category as, okay, if this is known by a reporter, they have to report this right away. It's their obligation to, you know, journalism, readers, what have you, fans, etc. So Kyle Shanahan having a concussion, being in an accident, as long as it doesn't come out that it's, you know, hit and run or with Kyle Shanahan at fault or DUI or anything, it's not a crime.
He didn't show up in the police blotter.
It didn't show up in the police blotter. So I think people, and Florio did this in his article, which I vehemently disagreed with. He conflated this with, well, we knew about Tony Romo's DUI as soon as it happened. A DUI and a car accident are not in the same category.
Way different.
And so even if reporters knew about the accident before the Niners announced it, like people have the right to privacy, particularly when it comes to personal injuries. And I think particularly when it comes to head injuries. Mm-hmm. And I think people are thinking about this car accident like it is a DUI, like it is a crime.
Right.
And that it's just not. And so if it were a DUI, I guarantee you it would have been reported as soon as anybody saw it. So mm-hmm. I just think like an example. Well, first of all, I want to give you a chance to respond to that if you have thoughts.
Yeah, man. It's look, there's this whole idea that, and maybe this is where you were going, but that there's this like cover up. Right. That this was deliberately hidden. But unless, like you said, so what would have had to happen? And also, we don't know who was at fault either. Like mm-hmm. That's the other part of it. If driver pulled out in front of Kyle Shanahan and he swerved and hit a median and rolled his car six times, like that's not, it's not like, oh my God, wow, look at this awful thing Kyle Shanahan did, which is, I think, where people are trying to go with this. I think people mm-hmm. are trying to make it a conspiracy theory, and not everything is a fucking conspiracy theory, man. Sometimes shit just happens. And if he got in this car accident, okay, let's just, Kyle Shanahan got in car accident, no drugs or alcohol, no crime. He was taken to the hospital. He was treated at the hospital, went home that day. Other driver, not hurt. Police officers take their reports and they go on their way. Unless somebody from the 49ers, who I would presume hears about this, reaches out to a reporter and says, hey, here's what happened in full detail. People aren't even going to know.
Yeah.
Like, so even like, let's go just for a moment. It's not like there was this, oh, Kyle Shanahan missed every day of practice during the week and then missed the game that week, and we didn't hear anything, and the beat just kind of went about their day. Reporters just went about their days. Nobody's asking questions about where Kyle Shanahan is. Okay, now let's talk, you know, people being complicit in some kind of weird cover-up.
Yeah.
That's not what this is. It was July 14th. Do you know what most NFL reporters are doing on July 14th?
Vacationing.
Doing literally anything other than focusing on football.
or police blotters from Palo Alto.
Right. But
at which, and I do want to point out too, while police responses to car accidents are logged, mm-hmm. Kyle Shanahan's name is not in the police report because it's not a crime.
Correct.
So
there was no arrest.
Without knowing directly or hearing from a source, it's not like, oh, this information is out there and it's sitting in front of you like an arrest record would be, right? Or a jail booking or whatever. Like, that information is not out there. So if you're cruising the Palo Alto police blotter and all you get is an accident, that's not something you can report on. So I just think like people are conflating the accident with a crime, and because it took a long time for the team to announce it, obviously like the optics of that are never good, right? It always feels like when a team delays something or when a team doesn't announce it right away, it feels like it could be part of a cover up. And I understand that. I'm a journalist. I'm skeptical. And like journalists are going to look into the body cam footage, right? Like that body cam footage is public and it should be released. And if it comes out that footage is released and it's clear that Shanahan got away with the DUI or he was under the influence and the police let him go, then that's a corruption issue with the police. That's not a journalism issue. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's just not the journalist's job to like, to report on a personal injury if it's not caused in a timely way. Like, I promise you that there were reporters that knew about this before it was announced. And a couple things. Sure. One, if a source tells you something and says explicitly, this is off the record and I don't want you to report this or that you got it from me, then it can't be reported. Or if you do report it, you go to another source. Like you can report it, you go to multiple other sources who confirm it, and then you end up reporting it and you potentially burn the main source, right? So if you're a journalist, that's the risk that you take at reporting this. Or you can just wait a week, and honestly, it doesn't matter because the news was out anyway, right? This, like, because it was an injury and not a crime, the fact that it wasn't reported the day or the day after it happened, like, nobody lost. Like, we all found out eventually, and it became public eventually. So this idea that, like, everyone's in the bag for the 49ers because they didn't report it initially, I think is just like incorrect. And it's way like completely incorrect to conflate this with a DUI, because Kyle Shanahan getting into a car accident is not is not a crime.
What? Yes, correct. Had reporter A found out, reporter A was driving by and saw this happen, saw the whole thing, and called the Niners and said, hey, care to comment? I'm going to report this. And the Niners said, oh my God, no. Like, I think that's different. Like, that's hey, Kyle Shanahan showed up in the police blotter. Any comment? He did A, B, and C crime. He was arrested. Thoughts? And they go, no, don't report it. Like, that's very different. But if the 49ers say, hey, just a heads up, this is a thing that happened off the record, da da da, I personally don't have a problem with the way this was reported. And honestly, credit to Nick Wagner at ESPN, full disclosure, our favorite cast member, had all the details when this story dropped. And I think that's the other important part of this is, let's say reporter A is hit up by 49ers PR person X and says, hey, just a heads up, Kyle Shanahan was in a car accident, don't report it. And they say, I have a duty to my readers, Kyle Shanahan was in a car accident. Okay, well, now it's out there. Now Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers are getting inundated with calls from all of the local media, all of the national media, and nothing happens. We just know that Kyle Shanahan was in a car accident. Now incomplete information is coming out, and now we're getting a half story here and a half story there, and now all of a sudden this fake story about, oh my God, there were A, B, and C drugs in his system, and now it's blown way out of proportion, and now we don't know what the hell story happened. What actually happened was just journalism before the age of Twitter, where all of the information comes out in chunks of varying degrees of credibility.
Yeah.
Reporters found out a thing happened, didn't have the full details, couldn't put it on the record yet, and in the process found out the details and then put it on the record when they could, so everybody could find out and could read about it in full detail. I don't know what else people want.
Well, there's a courtesy, right, when it comes to personal injury stuff. And like, I've covered professional athletes, and you can go back and look at our coverage of, you know, like athletes who, as an example, their wife is pregnant, about to have a baby. They leave the team, wife or significant other, partner, whatever. They leave the team to go be with their partner who is having a child. When that player leaves the team, what is most common is that player makes a request and says, please do not say I'm leaving the team because my partner is having a baby, just purely out of privacy. And like a lot of stuff can happen in childbirth. Like people don't want to be judged how long they're absent from the team for their partner having a child, right? Like there are complications, there are hospital stays. Like there's, it's a whole thing, right? So a lot of times players will just say, I'm going to be gone for personal reasons. If Kyle Shanahan were a third string receiver, it would have been Kyle Shanahan is away from the team for personal reasons.
Yep.
Which is very common. Like it's, and a lot of these personal reasons in sports, there's probably a lot of instances where they're just car accidents and there's an injury or there's a, you know, like some, a family member got into a car accident and you got to like take care of them. Like these things happen and not everything gets disclosed because Kyle Shanahan is the head coach of the team. It gets disclosed and it's obvious when he's out there not coaching and in a cast and those types of things. Right. So it's just there's a courtesy, particularly when you're a journalist covering a team, that you offer. Now, that being said, like, this isn't just like an open and shut thing. Like Kyle Shanahan got into an accident. Okay. Nothing to see here.
Right.
There's absolutely going to be more journalism done. And the Palo Alto Police Department is going to get grilled by a lot of writers. And they already are. And people are going to ask for the body cam footage to be released. And at that point, if something nefarious happens, then yes, we can talk about it in those terms. And, you know, talk about corruption, talk about teams having inappropriate relationships with local law enforcement, right? Like we can talk about that stuff because that stuff is real and it happens. And I would be stupid to foolishly like rule it out. Like it's absolutely not a possibility. But in terms of what we know right now, what we know right now is the authorities are saying drugs and alcohol were not involved. This is just a pretty, like, this is just a car accident, which as far as they're saying right now is not a crime. So as more facts come out, there will be more journalism, fans will know. And this isn't a scenario where, you know, journalists are in the bag for the 49ers as if there's never been any negative coverage of the 49ers.
Right.
So that's, I don't want to rant too much and talk in too many circles, but the criticism conflating a car accident with a DUI, I think is just incorrect and unwarranted.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Would you like to talk about training camp now?
Should we talk about lamb chops first?
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
When you said yes, I was going to say, let's talk about lamb chops first. So yeah.
SGLambChops.com is the website.
Yeah, it is.
I wore lamb chops out on the practice field today, obviously. I wore the great white shark shorts, and probably going to just wear only mesh shorts from lamb chops throughout the rest of my training camp visits. Because they're just the best shorts you could possibly wear out there in the California sun. SGLambChops.com. Use promo code Candlestick20 to save 20% off of your order. Additionally, throw Candlestick in the search bar and you will find the Candlestick Chronicles lamb chops merchandise, t-shirts, hoodies, great stuff. They will be making regular appearances at Levi's Stadium this season. Buy the merch, take pictures of it and send it to Kyle on social media at Kyle A. Madsen. And he will repost it. And we will be very, very appreciative of all that. Yeah. Lamb chops, promo code Candlestick20, SGLambChops.com. Join the herd.
I heard that's actually why Kyle Shanahan was out on the practice field today. to look at your lamb chop shorts.
Well, he didn't get.
I gotta get out there. I gotta get out there and get a glimpse.
He wasn't very close, but he'll probably listen to this and be like, "Man, I gotta go find Chris next time. See which ones he's rocking.
See what shorts he's wearing. Has he got those Dia de los Muertos Johns yet? Remember two episodes ago, they said they were on the way.
Yeah, we'll see.
I love the idea that Kyle Shanahan's locked into Candlestick Chronicles to the point that he knows like bits from the show.
God, that would be good.
That'd be really funny. Okay.
Jordan Watkins keeping DCs up at night. That's great stuff.
He's like, "Hey, Chris, beating the heat with those shorts, huh?" It's just a day one.
Just way back.
All right. Anyways, I have a bunch of stuff written down here from your observations from camp. Our buddy, sure. Nick Wagner, our favorite cast member, always does a great job with his post practice mm-hmm. observations, and various other people putting stuff out. And I just jotted down some notes today and I'm just going to roll through those in no order. Okay.
Great.
That work? Again, observations, not takeaways. Because it's day one of training camp and pads aren't even on yet. Okay, number one, the left guard battle. Chris Forster said after practice that Connor Colby and Robert Jones have separated themselves as the two starting left guard candidates. Anything, I know offensive line play is hard before pads, but anything noteworthy there outside of those two guys being the front runners?
Yeah, Forster basically said Colby is the incumbent and nobody's done anything to unseat him from the top spot yet. So as of now, and he didn't say Connor Colby's our starting left guard. He said Connor Colby is right now leading the competition because no one's been better than him yet. Yes. So if the season started next Sunday, more likely than not, it would be Connor Colby as the starting left guard. But I think they're going to continue to go through machinations. Carver Willis was playing right guard with the second unit today. And he probably sprinkled in over some left guard too, but, or at least he will later on in training camp. But yeah, sounds like for now, as of the first padless training camp practice on July 26, Connor Colby is your leader in the left guard competition.
I love the idea that last year's third string left guard, Connor Colby, is the incumbent and therefore he's hard to beat out.
Yeah,
we'll yeah, I'm expecting that to. That feels like one of those things where, unless pads come on and Connor Colby's just awesome, which I'm not like ruling out. I thought he had flashes last year when he did play. But it
you
feels
were
like
a big
one of those
Connor
things.
Colby guy.
Last yeah, time. I'm still a big Connor Colby guy. I'm over here. I got my lawn chair out, and we got Modelo's. It's a great time. So. I wouldn't be surprised if it's one of those things where, in this first set of joint practices, Connor Colby got all the first team reps. And in the second joint practice, it was Robert Jones got all the first team reps. Unless, like I said, Connor Colby's just awesome and Robert Jones isn't, which is certainly on the table. So something to watch for sure.
Yes.
One of the things that you noted that stuck out to me, because you and I talked about this on the pod, was where is Nick Martin going to line up? What is his job going to be on a defense with Dre Greenlaw at the Will linebacker spot, Fred Warner back healthy at the Mike linebacker spot? He doesn't really fit that prototypical Sam linebacker, but do they try and play him there to get him on the field, especially against these newfangled multiple tight end sets that so many teams are leaning toward? He was the starting Sam linebacker on day one of camp. Is that just he was going to be there before he got a concussion last year? Because I think he was playing Sam last year and got concussed on the first play of the game against Cleveland, or his first play of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of wondering if they're just same deal with Connor Colby. Like, yeah, he's there until he's not, or if he's just the guy that they've circled who they want to be their starting Sam this year.
What my read on it would be is that where guys line up early on in training camp is a reflection of how their offseason went, like how OTAs sure. and the spring program went. So I would think that they're impressed with Nick Martin and they like the skill set and they're rewarding him by giving him sort of that runway to say, all right, like you had a good spring, now see if you can build on it and win that job. That's my read on it. But we'll find out. It might be that, you know, I'm not going to practice on Monday, but it might be that Monday we find out, oh, Tatum Bethune is a starting Sam linebacker. And Bethune worked at Mike with the second team today behind Fred Warner. And at some positions, and a lot of times it's just guys aren't playing multiple positions in one practice. Guys will play one position in a practice and then switch positions in another practice. So there still might be a lot of moving parts there, but I think it's at least notable that Nick Martin was the Sam, given to your point, like he's not a typical like on-ball defensive end type.
Right.
He much more seems like a weak side fly around linebacker than a edge setting type player on the defensive line.
Yeah. The safety spot we just talked about, I feel like we've talked about them a lot because Malik Mustafa and Jair Brown and Marquise Siegel are all just kind of big question marks going into this year. What did that look? I almost texted you today to ask you about this, but was there anything? Was it just Jair Brown and Malik Mustafa were the starters, or was Marquise Siegel rolling with the ones? What did that look like?
The first snap, I tried to write down every defensive starter, and I'm pretty sure that it was Jair Brown and Marquise Siegel were the safeties on the very first snap of 11-on-11 drills. So, and Siegel had an interception of Mac Jones. Mac Jones threw two picks today. The other one was brought down by your guy, Jalen Graham.
Damn right it was.
Jack Jones involved in both plays. It was Siegel. Like Siegel, Brown, and Mustafa all seem to get a similar number of reps.
Sure. I think that's the right thing.
I asked Nick and how that rotation was going, just to kind of confirm what I was seeing. And Nick said he thought that Mustafa and Siegel were rotating while Brown was in with the ones the whole time.
Huh.
So I will see.
Wouldn't be my first choice, but what do I know?
Yeah. I think you and I are both kind of in this Siegel.
More in the bag for Marquise Siegel for sure.
The Siegel corner, and that like what his skill set is represents the most upside, I think, for the defense. But we'll see if Raheem Morris feels the same way.
I try really hard not to react too much to videos from training camp.
Yep.
But I'm only human. And Dejon Stribling looks like he can play. That's my takeaway from today.
He had two catches, at least two catches.
Just like the speed and the body control, he just looks like a player who knows how to play the position.
Yeah.
And I think that matters.
Yeah. I didn't get a great look at him today, admittedly, but he did have two really good catches. One was an out route on the left side of the field. I didn't think he got both feet in bounds, but the referees near the play signaled that he did. It was near the sideline. He made a good catch, showed good body control to get both feet in. And there was another one where he's in the right seam and he makes a catch kind of like back shoulder, but like falling. It seemed like a really good play from Mac. Both plays were from Mac Jones. It looked like he got the majority of his work with the twos, or at least with Mac Jones at quarterback. So Niners rotate the receivers a lot. I think Stribling is going to get a ton of reps in training camp. I think the 49ers are really excited about him. And the fact that he's doing things like making these tough catches after like the discussion has been, well, this guy will block. Like, you know what I mean? Like this guy played with physicality, this guy will block. Like if he's going to block and he's going to make really good catches in traffic, like that's potentially a really valuable asset to your offense. So we'll see, but I'm with you in that I think the signs are promising for him.
Can block and catch, good elements of a wide receiver. One of the things that you noted, we'll stick on the rookies here for a second. Romello Height rolling with the ones. Yeah. And my thing with this is less about, oh, Romello Height, that's huge, because if Nick Bosa is on the side and not doing team drills because they're easing him into work as he recovers from an ACL tear, and Michael Williams is starting camp on the PUP list, that means your third and fourth defensive ends are going to be your first team defensive ends in team drills. So Romello Height being one of those two players is not a surprise to me, and I don't think it's particularly notable. But I do think it's a big deal that a rookie is going to get an outsized number of reps in team drills. I think that to me is what matters a lot from that.
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, going into it, my expectation was, all right, Sam Okwuanu and Keon White are just going to like get all the reps with,
interesting.
With the ones.
Okay.
But it wasn't. It was Romello Height. So we'll see. I think it's notable, kind of like along the same lines of Nick Martin. Like anytime a young player who hasn't done a lot is given those opportunities, I think it's at least notable because the coaches are saying, you know, that you've done enough at least in the spring to earn these reps with the starters. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's where it's going to happen throughout training camp and even the preseason. But I think it's a good sign that, okay, this guy came in and wasn't completely over his skis.
The 49ers are not above burying a rookie.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Like if Romello Height was working with the threes, then obviously that would be a little bit worrisome for the guy your third round draft pick.
Right.
I think it's promising. I don't know. I guess I'll just say it. And if the 49ers get upset because I'm talking about scheme stuff, then I'll deal with that. But
I'd be so psyched they're listening.
Actually, I won't be specific. I'll just say this.
You're in the bag. You're in the bag for the 49ers.
I'm going to say this because I don't want my access revoked because I want to be able to give this analysis throughout training camp. I don't envision Romello Height making a position change to cornerback. I'll say that. Without offering specifics about what I saw on the field, he will not, in my estimation, ever play cornerback in the NFL.
Okay, good. You know what? No, there's what we can do. We can't make final decisions, but we can rule things out.
Yes.
And if we're ruling out that that it's a battle between him and Renardo Green for a starting cornerback spot.
Romello Height, for those
he wasn't not
who aren't
not,
familiar, a defensive end.
Not going to be in the safety rotation anytime soon.
Right.
Okay.
I would not. Good to know. Maybe to peel back the curtain a little bit more, I wouldn't assign him to a running back like, say, Christian McCaffrey out of the backfield.
Sure.
Without getting into what happened on the practice field scheme-wise.
Sure.
Actually, I did write it. Christian McCaffrey dusted Romello Height on a passing play. And then after he caught it, he cut inside Romello Height, just like fell down on the, like, it was,
hey man,
I wrote it in my story that it was,
hey, Niners, sort of his, if you're gonna,
welcome
if you're
to
gonna
the NFL
after,
moment.
If you're going to come after Chris for this, go after the writing. This is not the fault of the podcast. He's just saying what he wrote.
Yeah.
Speaking of rookies, one of the things that stuck out to me from fans who were tweeting about this and then the reporters tweeting about this as well. But Jordan James was the pretty clear cut RB2, which meant I'm not as concerned with what Jordan James looked like today, because I think I tell this story every single year, but there was a guy who the Titans drafted out of Cal whose name now escapes me. Kafani Muhammad, I believe, was his name. And he lit it up when I was at Titans Wire. He lit up OTAs and the offseason program and the first couple days of camp. It was like they got one. This like sixth or seventh round pick, late day three guy. It's like they got one. And then the pads came on and Kalfani Muhammad disappeared.
Sure.
So I don't want to, like, Jordan James looking good or whatever matters less to me. I want to know what Kalen Black is up to, because that's the storyline that matters to me here.
He got a lot of work. It was with, I think he got some work in with the twos. I don't think it was only Jordan James with the twos. I think Jordan James is probably ahead of Kalen Black at the moment, but it wasn't like Kalen Black is not getting any reps because he's, you know, like way down the depth chart. I think it's going to be a pretty interesting competition between those guys. I think Kalen Black is going to get a lot of work in training camp in the preseason. He is not the tallest player, but he's a running back, so it doesn't really matter. But just like him standing next to, you know, Mac Jones and the offensive lineman, he's like definitely the smallest guy on the field. But, you mm-hmm. know, like that's not exactly breaking news. But sure. I think that's going to be an interesting battle as camp goes on. I think we should circle that one. But I thought Jordan James had some nice pop. He laid a shoulder into one of the DBs. I think it might have been Daryl Luter, but I'm not positive on that. But there was one moment where, like, they're in shells, right? They're not in pads. He dropped a shoulder into a DB and like knocked him backwards. And
can you explain what shells are for the uninitiated?
They're like shoulder pads that aren't shoulder pads. They're like tiny little padded things that you wear on your shoulders that give your practice jersey a little bit of structure and a tiny bit of padding, but it's not a full-blown shoulder pad.
Right. And helmets.
Yes, they wear helmets. A lot of guys are wearing the new version of the Halo thing. What's it called?
Guardian cap.
The Guardian cap. Thank you. And what else? And it's like shorts and or football pants at this point. It's not obviously not pads in the full pants.
Right. Right. What's the sock situation? I'm joking. I think one of the things that everybody was keeping an eye on was Nick Bosa and what does he look like? And I didn't notice a discernible difference in his movement skills or whatever explosiveness you can see in a pass rush drill that is on film on the internet. But Trent Williams said he looks better than he did before the injury. Best shape of his life, Nick Bosa. Thoughts?
This is something that's been said about Nick Bosa every single training camp I've ever covered. Like, Nick Bosa looks camp, awesome. Dude.
Every single camp.
It's like a drinking Nick Bosa game at this point.
Exercises? Yeah, man. Yeah, he does.
So it would be like, obviously he's not on PUP, like coming off ACL tear. He looks like he could be participating in full team drills, but they're going to ramp him up. I think overall Nick Bosa, like where Nick Bosa is positive, right? It looks like he's going to be ready for the start of the regular season, no problem. And that to me is the big takeaway. But yeah, it's like a drinking game at this point. It's like, oh, it's July. Like guys are going to talk about how buff Nick Bosa looks. And it's like, that's just what it is. He's got a great regimen. He's really into working out. He's really into nutrition. And like when he's at his peak, he's one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. We all know that. But if you go back, like do a Google search throughout the coverage, I guarantee you, you'll find quotes and stories about, oh man, Nick Bosa looks awesome. Like it's a yearly tradition. And so I kind of chuckled today when Trent Williams said that and Fred Warner noticed it. It's like, yeah, Nick Bosa looks awesome. Like, yes, he's look every he single training camp. This is the case.
He's noticed Bosa looks pretty jacked. Yep.
What Williams did say is like when somebody has an ACL tear, you can, or like an injury like that, you can see atrophy. You can see a limp. You can see them maybe operating a little bit. He's like, there's none of that with Bosa. So I guess that's, you know, it's notable.
We'll see when the pads come on.
Sure.
That's what I'm waiting for. I'm a real football guy. Last thing for me, just more of a note, less observation than anything. Vidarian Lowe and Christian Kirk both left with injuries. Vidarian Lowe, the presumed swing tackle, and Christian Kirk, presumed third, fourth, fifth wide receiver.
Presumed potentially injured receiver.
Presumed possibly not participating in practice tomorrow, Monday, receiver. No, they both left with injuries. And then Nate Hobb, the cornerback, was not in attendance for unknown reasons, at least last I saw. So
yeah,
that was it on the injury front. Chris Forster was mum on that after practice. So no word on the nature or extent of those injuries.
Yeah.
Just wanted
I don't really have a lot to add. It looked like an ankle for Lowe. I didn't see what happened with Kirk. But given his recent injury history, Christian Kirk, you know, leaving practice wouldn't be a surprise. Particularly practicing next to the substation, am I right?
Yeah, man. Hey, news real quick from John Lynch yesterday. Nothing. George Kittle on PUP to start the year, along with Mykel Williams, Alfred Collins, and Isaac Arendo, who tore his pec earlier in the offseason. Of course, everybody knew that. And sounds like Alfred Collins is going to be back for the second portion of training camp, like the second section of practices, I guess you'll call them. And PUP just for training camp means they're on the active roster. They're on the 90-man roster, but they can't practice until they come off of PUP. But what putting them on PUP does is that allows them to be on PUP during the regular season, like not come off PUP and stay there through the start of regular season.
IR.
Yeah. Where their return doesn't cost an IR slot. So that's just, I think, precautionary in case, you know, even if Alfred Collins is set to come back in a week or whatever, it's just in case something weird happens, because once they come off PUP, they can't go back on.
Yeah. And Collins was getting a pretty,
Collins
was getting a pretty good workout in with the training staff at practice. He looks like he's in good shape. He's good moving shape. Around. Nice. He's doing pass rushing drills. Like, you know, it's not like he's like George Kittle was basically just observing practice. Mm-hmm. I didn't see him like doing a workout. Like Alfred Collins was doing like a pretty like vigorous workout. So
sure.
Whatever that means for his status, I'm not sure, but he was doing stuff. So
nice.
I think he'll be available at some point in August.
Any atrophy that you noticed?
Not that I could tell. I was probably about 40 yards away, but and he was wearing a shirt, the shoulder atrophy might be difficult to discern.
Any word on George Kittle's gait?
Seem normal. Okay, he's got kind of a weird, even when he's healthy, he's got kind of a weird gait. You notice, like, he kind of seems like, you know what I mean?
Like he walks like he grunts when he sits down.
He probably does, and I wouldn't blame him. But
same.
Yeah, like that. I think that's a good way to put it. He's not, I wouldn't say George Kittle glides when he's healthy and you watch him move around. He's kind of like this, like, which is, you know, just part of
classic George.
Classic George.
Anything else?
I'm wondering if I have anything else? Let me go back to my tweet.
Any strong Curtis Rourke takes?
What's that?
Any strong Curtis Rourke takes?
No, none. Absolutely not. Christian McCaffrey looked great. Christian McCaffrey looked like he's in midseason form. I thought he was like actually pretty explosive looking. And I think he hasn't spoken to the media obviously since camp started yet, but when he does, I think he's going to be asked about explosiveness and averaging 3.9 yards per carry last year. And, you know, us talking about, he's not us specifically. I mean, maybe, but people talking about maybe him losing a step. He looks springy and spry and more explosive than he did last year. We'll see if that lasts. The other side of that, though, he was getting a lot of snaps. Like a lot of snaps on the first day of camp, and he caught a lot of balls. He had a lot of runs. The idea that the 49ers are going to like limit his touches to like keep him fresh, at least through one practice, didn't seem like it was happening. Maybe he's just going to like practice once, take the next day off, practice, you know, like we'll see what his workload is as camp goes. But from as day one goes, he got a ton of work.
I feel like they're just doing a bit. Like, I feel like they're like, hey, guys, have you seen all the writing? We were listening to Candlestick Chronicles the other day, and they said that they're trying to see if this is the year Christian McCaffrey gets some snaps off. Please.
Fat chance.
You all thought.
But he looks great. Like, I thought he was like super explosive. He had a couple good runs. And again, no pads, so it's hard to tell what really is a good run, but he had some plays that I thought, it's like, oh, that's Christian McCaffrey. Yes, he is present. Mm-hmm.
All right, Christian McCaffrey, looking present. Good. Good at football.
It's the same
Subscribe, rate, review.
It's the same thing as Bosa, where it's like, oh man, sky looks awesome. Like, yes, it's July. This guy, they always look awesome in July. Right. They've been,
the all pro looks good. Yeah. The all pro looks good playing football and no pads.
Yeah.
Wow. F and A.
Yep.
Did you take Brock Purdy's stats today?
I did not. I was deliberately not counting his throws and his completions. I was just kind of writing down observations.
Okay, well, while you were
anti training camp stats guy. I just think the context is so difficult to discern. Like, was that a sack or wasn't it? Was that like an offsides and they just let the play happen anyway? Was that like, did the defense let up for whatever? Like, there's so many things that happen in a practice field that don't happen in games that it's like, it's hard for me to like jot like, oh yeah, that was for sure a completion and not a sack, or that was, you know, so I just feel like, and you always see people who are tracking the numbers. Everyone has different numbers for all these different reasons. And it's just like, all right, at a certain point, it's like, what's really the use?
Nick Wagner had him down for 10 of 12. That's big.
Yeah, there was one. Incompletion on, it looked like a deep cross with Ricky Pearsall, and it didn't seem like he was in the right spot, or Purdy threw it to the wrong spot. Like, there was a miscommunication, and that was notable to me. It wasn't a great Ricky Pearsall practice from what I saw. So we'll see. We will see.
Yeah, one of the things that I think is notable is the thing that didn't really happen. And this is something I'll be watching for all of camp, is you talk about Pearsall and Purdy being on the same page, just avoiding the practice where it's like Mike Evans and Brock Purdy are just not connecting. And it sounded like
There was a really nice Mike Evans. I don't know if it was technically a deep ball, but it was like a 25 yard throw. Layered right over D'Amador Lenore's shoulder, right to Mike Evans on sort of that deep ball that we've talked about.
Yeah.
Mike Evans looks fine. He's not the fastest dude, but like he's fine.
He's a Hall of Famer.
If he's healthy, he's going to be really nasty in this offense.
Yeah. So as long as it's not like, wow, Evans and Purdy are getting extra work after practice to try and get on the same page. Like, that's kind of what I have no doubt that Mike Evans is good and that Brock Purdy is good, but as long as they're on the same page, it's like you said, I think it's going to be a productive year for Evans. Yep. It's all I got for
that. That's all I got.
Nice.
Come here for journalism 101. Stay for Niners camp analysis.
Stay for day one camp analysis. So I think we'll figure out a pod schedule as we go here. I doubt we'll do something after every day of camp unless there's something super notable. But what we typically do is after a few days of camp, or after a couple of days when they have their day off, we'll do kind of like bigger picture takeaways from a collection of practices than just reacting to one. So,
yeah. And the pads aren't on yet, so just keep that in mind.
So take all of this with a grain of salt.
As Fred Warner said, football is played in pads. And
he said that?
He said that today.
Wow.
He was asked about the rookies and he kind of laughed and he was like, well, it's hard to tell without pads. Football is played in pads, so I'll reserve judgment. I was like, okay.
Get that tattooed on my neck. Tattooed is football's played in pads. Fred Warner. Right here.
Friend of the pod. Friend of the program.
Go back and listen to that pod. It's a good pod. Fred's a good guest.
We will talk to you guys later. Subscribe, rate, and review. Shout out to Lamb Chops. We'll talk to you guys.
Shout out our Rucker.
That's our show for today. Thank you everybody for listening. Candlestick Chronicles is produced and edited by Mike Robbie. If you're not already doing so, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@Candlestick Chronicles Podcast. Candlestick Chronicles is an Odyssey production.